Welcome to the world of the strange, the mystical, and the unknown. Jerry Pippin's Parazone.
Welcome to the Parazone. Tonight we have a true story that really rivals anything that you have seen on TV or seen in the movies. Twilight Zone has nothing on this family who lives near St. Louis. In fact, in the heyday of radio, there was a show each week that dealt with the subjects of demons and the undead and all kinds of ghostly things. Remember Inter Sanctum?
This is your host. Welcome again through the squeaking door to another session of mystery, murder, and madness.
Well, today we're going to tell a tale that is as terrifying as anything from the minds of the Hollywood fiction writers. It's a story of evil lurking in the home of a normal family, an American couple with three children. Upon investigation, we can find no reason for the demons to be haunting this couple and their family. There is a book out about all of this. It's called Never Alone, One Family's Hope for Finding Peace While Living with the Paranormal and Never Alone, The Journey Home. I think you'll find this program especially interesting. We have on the phone right now the author, and she is speaking from her haunted home, Lisa Lindley. Lisa, thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for having me.
I guess things are normal now.
Well, normal,
at your house?
No. I guess it depends how you define what normal is. I haven't had a normal life for about 5 years, but we're trying fiercely to keep one.
Why don't you explain to our listeners right off the bat what we're talking about here?
Okay. Back in 2003, my family and I were living what you said, the so-called normal life. Everything was fine. And we went to look for our first home, and we had found an old farmhouse on 5 acres for a really cheap price. And, of course, most people question, you know, why is it so cheap? And we kind of did that. And found out that we kind of really liked this place. We were very much drawn to it, and for the money, you couldn't beat it. Well, we ended up buying this home, and 2 weeks after we moved into the house, my daughter, who was 9 at the time, had told us that a little girl named Linda was coming out of her closet at night to play dolls with her. And we were kind of your all-American family next door. We loved Halloween. We had the yard everybody wanted to see. And at that point in time, I guess my interest in the paranormal shifted because now it was at my house. And since 2003, we've had a lot of things happening at both of our homes. We moved to a second one in 2005.
So before we go any further, you're saying that not only the first house was haunted, but the second one too?
Yes, sir, unfortunately.
Same ghost?
You know what? From my family's experience now, we know that we had demonic activity the whole time. It just was manifesting itself in an innocent way. And about a year ago, in our second home, we found out that that is not what we had at all. And everything we thought we knew was totally turned upside down. And there are certain things that when you go through a haunting like this, you know when the circumstances change. And that is why I'm talking about this, because I think not a lot of people really understand the truth about what all of this is. But the second house, we've been here for 2 years, and things have very much changed. I wouldn't say totally for the worse, because our family is bonded closer because of this experience. But the activity
Why do you think demonic activity or demons are haunting your house?
Well,
now, does it happen to a lot of people?
I wouldn't say what has happened to us has happened to a whole lot of people. I know one other person that went through a similar experience, but his case is pretty well documented, and he is one person I had talked to for help with this. But a year ago in the second house, things became very different. The entities in our home were becoming more interactive. That's a good way to put it. things were becoming violent and angry. My daughter, who is now 14, was thrown across the room into some furniture, and she is very sensitive. She can hear things and see things that not a lot of other people
can. Why were they upset, these demons?
We don't know. Just from our experience, all we know is that things were, you know, tolerable up until about a year ago, and things became very violent and interactive, and that's when we knew the shift had changed. A lot of people say, how did you know? Well, we know. We're living in the middle of this nightmare. But like I said, our family is fighting back in the best way we can. We left our home. Actually, we fled is a better word, a year ago for 6 days, and then we came back and had to make a decision. How were we going to get through this? And you can't move. This is a really good point that, you know, the listeners probably need to know. You can't run from this. When something is attached to your family, which we think now that that is the case more so than the locations that we've lived, you can't run from it. You have to fight against
now,
it.
Now, what was the event that made you flee away there so fast? I mean, I guess you'd had enough, but what really was the straw that broke the camel's back?
Yeah, exactly. That's a good way to put it. We had come home. We were gone, and on August 11th of 2007, we came home and were minding our own business, walked in through our back door of our home into the foyer area of our house, and my daughter looked up at the steps, and she said, "Mom, there's a man standing there with a trench coat on and an old-time hat." It's one of the entities that had been spotted in the house before, in addition to many other ones. And I said, "Don't tell Dad," because at that point in time, my husband wasn't a true believer. It was kind of just seeing how we were acting. And when I saw that, it frightened me, but I tried to act like the brave mom, and I let the dog out, and I kept looking back through the glass windows and felt like something was staring at me. Came back in, and she said, "Mom, it spoke." And I said, "What do you mean it spoke?" And this is the first time we had had verbal threats from anything in our home, and it said, "I know you can see me, you SOB. Why don't you just admit it?" And it said this to my daughter, and it was not abbreviating for her.
Was it a male voice?
It was a male entity of some sort. I'm not calling it a ghost because from what we've lived with, we know these are not ghosts. They're very deceitful and can appear to be whatever you want them to be. I mean, a child appearing to a child, we've had that happen. Just a lot of different things.
You mentioned your dog. Did he notice these things?
Our dog has acted very strangely on a lot of occasions, but that wasn't exactly all that happened that made us leave. This is the starting point for the events that occurred over the next 48 hours. My daughter was being attacked. These voices were screaming at her, saying that we needed to leave the house, just constant screaming. And she would cry, and she was holding her head, and she said, "Mom, we need to get out of here. We're being threatened." And part of you as a parent, you want to believe your child, and I totally did without a doubt because we've been living like this for a very long time. And I said, "No, we're going to stay." Part of your humanistic, you know, part of you as a human, you try to rationalize this and say, "I'm not leaving my house." Well, for the next, you know, 2 days, she was being screamed at, yelled at, cursed at. These things were telling her to hurt herself, to go in the kitchen, get a knife, and cut herself. It was really dark stuff. And my husband took my younger son out to get away from some of this and came back. And things just got a little hairy, and we decided we were going to go ahead, and where would we even go if we were going to move somewhere? So we got everybody, we left, we came back, walked into the foyer area, and she said, "Mom, do you see them?" And I said, "What do you mean, do I see them?" And she said there were 7 demons standing on our stairwell, and they were saying that we needed to leave. They were threatening our family, and they said, "If you do not leave, you're going to have to pay the price." I mean, they said, "We've been waiting for you." It was almost like they knew that my daughter could see and hear them, and they were going
to... She saw them, but no one else did.
I could sense something. I have a very, I guess, big sensitivity about me as well, unfortunately, and I have seen things in this house that are very evil, red or black hooded figures. We've both seen them in the house. There was one standing over her bed in the middle of the night around 2 in the morning. I had seen that. There's things that, you know, you're not looking for, and they just appear like this. And since when we fled that night, when we actually left, I looked at my husband, and he looked at me. And I mean, we were going through a very hard time with her. We got the Bible out. We were trying to read aloud. They say that usually works. We were not going to church at the time, so it was kind of an empty attempt at getting some sanity here. What were we going to do? And the people that I trusted, they said, "You need to get out now. You need to leave," because this was a progression of events, of things that led up to that night. And I looked at him, I said, I'm not staying here. We need to pack it up and go. And we were just going to be gone for one night. We were going to my parents' house to stay, which is over 45 minutes away, scrambling around the house, getting things, and left. And we were followed to my parents' house. My daughter said that she was hearing the voices. They were chanting in some foreign language, saying that she was going to become one of them tonight. And all we could do was pray. My husband prayed. He said nothing happened. He kept, you know, remembering somebody talking about that, you know, someone had died and they had come back, and he said when they went over, they were crossing whatever procedure that is, that he remembered praying, and he went into the light, and, you know, he was protected. Well, by the third time he prayed the Lord's Prayer, he said he felt this presence overcome he and my daughter both, and he knew that something was very real on the other side, I guess, when you're talking about the power of God and safety and all these kind of things, and it was a pretty amazing experience, but it hasn't totally solved our problem, but that is what we're doing to get through this. So we had a crash course on how do you battle demons. We had to make a quick decision. What are we going to do, sell the house or come back, and then how do you sell a house like this with a good conscience? So we decided to come back. I was scared to death to come back because I wasn't on the same level my husband was with the faith, and I kind of had to just go through some more to get to where I am today.
So you were gone for the 6 days.
6 days we were gone, and then my husband said we have to come back.
And when you came back, can you describe to our listeners how the house looked the same, I guess?
Really, there was no indication that we had ever left, and except for, you know, the answering machine based blinking, you know, the light on there, that we had unanswered calls. I actually came back to the house because our kids were starting school that week, and my husband said, don't go in. You're not ready to deal with this. You can't. You're not strong enough to deal with this. And it was almost like I felt like I was an intruder going into someone else's home, and here it was mine, and I had to go in to get a few things. And when I came in the first time, I thought, this is insane. This is my house. You know, you're saying this is where I live. I called a friend on the phone, and I had someone talk to me the entire time. And I got out a Bible, and I set it face up on
Weaver. Did you go in there by yourself?
I did. And I am telling you, it was the hardest thing I ever had to do. And I think it was the night after we left, some pastors from a local church, I had called them in a state of panic. I said, we live right up the street from you. This is not where we were attending church at the time. And they met with us for a while and actually went into the house with us to get a few things because we didn't plan on being gone that long. And when I was upstairs, I told my husband, if we all go up, or one of us goes upstairs, we all go, because I didn't want to be alone in the house in any particular room. We were up there, and they were in another bedroom, and I had turned my back to our one bedroom that's being used for storage that's connected to our attic, and a lot of activity occurs in this area, and when I had my back turned to the doorway, I heard something growl at me in a very low tone, and startled me quite a bit. I just jumped, and they were like, it's fine, don't worry, they're very confident, and I was not. So it was very, very difficult to come back here, because now ever since...
What kind of growl was it? Like a dog's growl, a wolf's growl, or a monster's growl, or what?
A very low, grovelly kind of tone. It wasn't from this world. And you know, when it was happening to me, I knew it was happening, and I didn't... I wasn't trying to identify it with anything. I just knew that something had happened at that moment that scared me literally half to death. That's probably the best way. It just wasn't from... It wasn't a sound that you hear on a regular basis, if that's a good way to put it. But, you know, since we've been back and we came back, you know, we've had nothing short of these demons appearing as what they are. It's pure evil from a place, from another world. These things always appear, it seems, in like a red or black hooded, it's like a hooded figure. It has a cloak or a cape attached to it. Sometimes my daughter will see their faces. Sometimes she won't.
Has she described their faces?
Yes. Usually when we see them now, they have blackened eyes, no pupils. She said, Mom, it's like their eyes are totally blackened. She's been followed to other locations, school she's been followed to, and it's always in a pack of seven. There are seven. And she said the middle one, who apparently is like their leader, I guess if you want to put it that way, in their hierarchy of demons, whatever this is, the middle one, she said, does not have a face. It's almost like a swirly, like a pool of water kind of thing. But the other one, she said, always have dark hair, their faces look similar to ours, but their eyes always look...
Did you say they're in capes or trench coats or...
Like a hooded... It's a hooded figure. It's almost like... I was talking to someone...
Almost like a monk?
Kind of like... Someone had said, is it kind of like in the Star Wars movies? They said, are you a Star Wars fan? I said, yes, I love Star Wars. They said, what about the Emperor in the Star Wars? Like the long cape with the hood... And I said, yeah, that's kind of similar to what it is, but when I saw what I saw the night that it was standing over her bed, I couldn't see a face.
Let's take a break, and when we come back, I want to find out about that night. Don't go away. You are in the Parazone. A feeling of terror. It's all around us. Hello, this is Jerry Pippin, and all of our shows on the Parazone Hour, Tales of High Strangeness, are available on demand 24/7 as a podcast or Windows download, and it's free. Just click on the Parazone button on the sidebar of our website, jerrypippin.com. Welcome back to the Parazone, Tales of High Strangeness. Lisa Lindley's our guest. Her house is haunted. In fact, demons live there in her home right there in the St. Louis area. Lisa, before we get back to the horrible events, let me ask you a personal question. How many people in your family?
We have five, three children, and my husband and I.
And the older daughter is the one that has all of the seeings, for lack of a better term, or the sightings or experiences?
Originally, it was just her, but now my three-year-old is having experiences, and my nine-year-old son also has had experiences where he has seen things, but I think it's more of a target towards my older daughter.
You have a clue, or does she, or anyone, on why she's the target?
No, I don't know why our family is the target, because at different times it goes after all of us but my husband. I guess he's not afraid and he doesn't fear too many things, so they always seem to go after the weakest link in the family, and a helpless child, I think that's a weak link.
Now you've written several books, right?
I have written three, I guess, in this, if you want to call it a series, and I wrote...
Those are children's books?
I wrote one children's book, but the other ones talking about our story are more for the adult crowd.
And all of these books are on the same subject?
Yes, actually... I didn't plan on writing anymore after the first book came out. It was kind of a joke among girlfriends, you know, you should write a book about this. And when we first started having things happen, I couldn't find information for myself to help me with my current situation with my kids. I thought, somebody has to do something. And so that's where the first one came out. And then when we fled our home and came back, my husband and I were pretty much in agreement that we needed to tell the rest of our story. We needed to tell the truth about what had happened to our family, because the first one was very well received.
Now, are all of you from Missouri originally?
No, my husband's from Illinois.
But close to there, where you live. You live in the St. Louis area.
Right, just a little bit outside of.
Now, let's get to that experience, because we left people hanging. You saw this entity for the first time. When was this?
This was about a year and a half ago, about 2 in the morning. I had went upstairs. We're renovating a big old house.
So in other words, these things have been happening for 4.5 years before you saw anything.
No, actually, in demonic form, if you want to call it that way, the entities changed. It was from 2003 to 2005 when we looked at the first house. They were appearing as innocent, if you want to call it, apparitions, where my daughter would see this little girl coming out of her closet. She saw a military man in a uniform one night on our stairwell.
Could you tell of what era that uniform was?
I don't know, and I had asked my dad about it because he was a military person, and she said the belt buckle said U.S. Army on it, and it was, you know, the camo-type uniform, and... She said this entity was holding a gun and pointing it at her on the staircase. The man had a very disturbed-looking face, and she had seen a little boy on the property with a ball cap on. There was a lot of activity that happened at the first house. I think the story started there because I think a door was opened that our family just walked in on this, and then I think whatever was there may have latched onto our family. But they were innocent. They weren't getting interactive. I had seen a few things. There were other people that had had experiences in the house with things disappearing. We had a girl that was in the house that didn't know anything about anything going on. She said she felt like someone was tightly squeezing her wrist, and she needed to get out of there. It was like a panicked feel, and she said once she got out, she was fine. It was just confirming that other people were having things happen to them. It wasn't just to us. Well, then when we moved to the second house, that is when things got very interactive, and just these things that were showing up on film, no one could identify. We started taking pictures of the renovating because I like to do before and after, and these entities were showing up on film, and I couldn't believe it. I told my husband, we need to put this on the computer and blow it up and look at it, and I said, there's no way. There is no way we bought another house like this. In the first house, there was a suicide that we knew about 6 months prior to us buying it.
Are these two houses close to each other?
They're about 45 minutes apart.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
And well, in the first house too, the owner's son was, we think, practicing some sort of witchcraft or Satanism in, well, what became my daughter's bedroom. There was a pentagram drawn on the, I think it was on the windowsill or the wall. We painted over it. There were some evil posters up on the wall that we'll just tear them down. We weren't looking for this. You know, when we went to the first house, it was just this cool old house we could fix up. We'll make it work. But I did get an eerie feeling about it when we first looked at it. And I asked the realtor, I said, you know, let me ask you a question. Did somebody die here? It was like I just could feel something wasn't right. She looked at me like, how would you know that? And then in the disclosure, they had kind of alluded to the fact that someone had committed suicide on the property. And then we went back and forth. You know, can we buy a house like this knowing someone died there? And my husband said, people die in houses every day. It's really cheap with 5 acres. Let's just do it. And we moved in and all this started. But, you know, at the second
one. What was your closest neighbor?
They weren't real close because we were out.
In other words, this is your typical spooky location, if you want to look at it that way. Or it could have been the most beautiful location and peaceful, you know.
Yeah, the house sat up on a hill, you know, away from the road, which was nice. It had a private driveway. We thought, okay, this is good. We won't have people driving by all the time. But it was just a very sad place. It had a lot of sadness about it. And I just thought, you know, we'll fix it up. It'll be cheerful and bright, and then all this crazy stuff happened. But when we moved, we didn't move to get away from it. That wasn't the thing at all. I had a job change, and we couldn't have two houses. We had bought this one because we needed more room. My husband found the bargain basement steal of a deal once again, and it really was the house, the one we're on now, but I thought I'd want to stay here forever. The old winding staircase, mm-hmm. You know, the ceilings to die for and the whole thing. And then, you know, it just wasn't serious with the first house. It was, you know, becoming kind of interesting, I guess. Some people would look at it that way. But when we went through this again, the kids were not wanting to sleep in their rooms. Strange things were happening. And just, you know, my daughter got thrown across the room. It was just,
now,
I knew that it was not.
When we talk about you fleeing the house, the second house, August 13th, 2007 was the date. Right?
Yes, sir. That was the date.
Was that Friday?
To look back up on, yeah, I know Friday the 3rd. Oh, you know, I didn't even think about that. I just have to point that out. No one's ever pointed that out before. You know, to be perfectly honest with you, I don't know what there was about that date. And I still wonder sometimes, you know, was it an anniversary date of something? Why that particular date? Was the Lonely family going to get the scare of their life? And I can't answer that. I just remember, like it was yesterday, the panic we went through, not knowing what to
now,
do.
Now, you went to your parents' house?
We did, but that...
What did they think about it?
After 2 days of this, we went there. My mom has always been a believer in a lot of things. She knew how much I liked paranormal for a hobby before this happened.
Yeah, I guess you were kind of a horror movie freak and a book freak. And
not really a horror movie thing, just like suspenseful things. Love decorating for the holiday.
Okay.
We were the family that we were known
for. You loved Halloween.
Yeah, we did. We were just... I loved everything
about...
Well,
my mother was a good Christian woman, but she loved Halloween.
Yeah, you can do that. It's got a different meaning for us. But my mom was, you know, I don't really know what they were thinking. I know my dad had a few different opinions about, you know, what all this was, and I'm not really sure he understands today what all this was. But we, just out of respect, we kind of didn't get into a big discussion. He knew, though, that something had happened to us. Everybody that knew us, you know, your actions speak louder than words.
What is your dad's vocation? What was he?
He didn't really say a whole lot, to be honest.
No, I mean, his work, his life.
Oh, my dad, he used to own a body shop. So he
okay. And your husband is he a professional man
he's
or what?
Sales. Okay. Uh-huh.
Just trying to flesh this out and figure out, you know, I am fascinated with this, or I wouldn't be doing these kind of shows. And in different periods in my life, I've had spooky experiences or fearful experiences, but I don't know quite how it would deal with something as blatant as this.
You know, blatant's a great word to put it. It just became a very real situation. And I know I'm talking about this publicly, but I have to be very honest because we're all about being honest and real because that's who we are. We're just normal people like everyone else out there. The more things happen to us and when these attacks come on, it's very, very serious. And I told my husband, people just do not understand, but how could they, because they're not walking through your shoes. I think if someone had a hidden, like, nanny cam where they walk around with you for a week and they see what your children go through and what your family goes through, that they would be more of a believer because it is fascinating. I mean, I used to be into this fascinating kind of stuff. But
would you be open to a reality TV crew following you around for a while?
My husband would never go through this fighting. Like, I would rather have peace back in my life. I mean, people say, you know, if you could go back to 2003... before you guys moved into your first house, would you go back there? And in some ways, I would love to pick up, but is it better to be naive and not know the truth or to be slammed with the truth and you know, really know what's going on? But how many people actually, you know, experience something like this firsthand? I mean, I only know one other person that fled their home with their children, and when they went to wherever their next location was, I don't believe that they were followed. I don't think they had any more occurrences or anything bad. They may have.
Did anyone in your family, when these things were interacting, say, why are you bothering us? Why us?
We had, and this may sound crazy to the listeners, but like I said, I just have to tell it like it is. We were having, you know, interactive conversations with the walls, basically. We're like, why are you here? What do you want? You're not welcome. What is it that...
And you never got a satisfactory answer?
We did, but I think it was a bunch of lies. Like, my daughter, she can hear things that people can't. In their language, I say they're referring to this demonic stuff, they say things back, but it's in a broken kind of language. But we were actually having a conversation, like we would say, you know, What do you want? What do you want with my daughter? And it would come back and say, you know, something. And my daughter would repeat back, Dad, it's saying this. Well, we got into this, it sounds crazy, heated discussion about what all this was. And that's why I think, you know, and this is what made it so real. And I didn't know about this until a lot later. When the seven appeared on the stairs the night we left, you know, I didn't know anything religious about Bible verses or anything like that, and a friend pointed out to me there is a verse in Matthew, I believe it's in the 13th chapter, and it talks about when one cannot find rest, it will bring seven in its place more wicked than itself, referring to demons and all this kind of thing. I had no knowledge of this. My kids didn't have any knowledge, and when I learned that this was very real, that this stuff was written in there, I mean, it scared me half to death because I thought, this is not happening. Why is our family getting this firsthand? It was too many things were happening that were making too much sense. I had, you know, one person I called that he used to do EVPs, mm-hmm. You know, teach people about the electronic voice. And I tried to call this man's house. My daughter was out on the front porch crying. I said, go outside of the house because this is when the attack was going on, when they were crying and screaming, or she was crying and were screaming at her. And the gentleman's name was Todd I was trying to call. And then I tried to call a lady that we had done a walkthrough with the house that I trusted from the first house. She was the only person I've ever brought in here that's a so-called psychic or, you know, medium. And I had called this, and I asked the lady, I said, you know, when is he going to be back? I really need to talk to him. We're in a very bad situation right now. The phone line went completely dead at that very moment. My daughter came in the house, and she said, Mom, it wants to know who this Todd guy is you're trying to call. And that freaked me out because I'm like, how would this thing know that I'm trying to call this man named Todd? And then when I talked to the older lady, she's like an elderly lady on the phone, it wanted to know who the old hag was I was talking to on the line at that very moment. And she's outside. My daughter's sitting out on the front porch. And I'm calling these people because I'm panicked. You know, my husband took my son out, and I thought, I'll make a couple calls. I didn't want him to know how bad I was actually losing it. And it just was making a little too much sense. And when these things said, you know, we came back, we're waiting, we've been waiting for you. If you don't leave, your family's going to pay the price and die. I mean, I just, this was like something you can't physically wrap your mind
You're
about.
Convinced that saying the Lord's Prayer, did you hold up a cross?
No. And, you know, this is the kind of funny thing, ironic, funny in a way. We don't have any religious paraphernalia hanging up in our house. We just don't. But the prayer is so powerful. You have to understand what it means, I guess. Like, my husband was raised Catholic. And when we left the house, he went to a Catholic priest for help, thinking that that would be the way to go. And he thought we needed a psychologist.
Oh, really? The Catholic Church is famous for
the exorcism.
This guy wasn't having any of that, huh?
No, it was, I think, somebody on call, basically. It might not have been their head priest, but my husband said, I'm going to go out. This is after went to my mom's. He said, I'm going to go try to find some help, a bookstore, anything, anybody. And he said, the guy just looked at him like, are you kidding me? Because they don't hear about this, I guess, as often as you would think, but they did sort of pray for us. So my husband left very disheartened. And, you know, he got back to my parents' house, and he told me where he went. And he said, I think we really need somebody that believes in what we're dealing with. But I couldn't believe it. I was just like, they turned us away? You've got to be kidding
me. Let's take another break, and when we come back, let's get into more details here. And obviously things have calmed down somewhat. And I want to find out why. Stay tuned for more on this tale of high strangeness. You are in the Parazone. Variety radio at its best can be found on our website, jerrypippin.com. JerryPippin, all one word, P as in podcasts. Hundreds of hours available anytime for free. JerryPippin.com. Never Alone is the name of the book. Lisa Lindley is the author. She's on the line from her home near St. Louis. She says her home is inhabited by demons, evil ones. Linda, do you remember the day it clicked in your mind that these weren't ghosts, but actually demons? These are devil creatures.
I totally remember when that was. The first indication was one night my daughter was thrown across her room into some furniture, and that was right after my first book came out. And I'm not a professional writer. It just was something that kind of came up. I don't want people to think that we're just trying to sell books. It's just a way to reach people with what, you know, our family's been through and how we can help somebody else. But it was just a couple days after that, and I thought, I wonder if something got angry that we went public with this information. You know, something in the house, because you're revealing things that maybe they don't want other people to know. And it just after that point, things took a turn for the worse, because shortly thereafter, the night we left on August 11th of 2007 and came back, that's when the entity that was in the trench coat with the hat spoke to my daughter and said, I know you can see me. Why don't you just admit it? And then that was when everything took the nosedive for the worst. And it just does. How can you wrap your mind around this? It's very hard to do that. I mean, some days I keep thinking, you know, I know we're going through this, but when you try to explain it to people, you know, you wonder what people are thinking about it. But all I know is, you know.
So in other words, you weren't a particularly religious family, so other side, the demons, they weren't trying to, destroy your faith. That you could tell. I'm still amazed about why they picked you, and you've already told me you don't have a clue, or do you?
The date, I don't have a clue, but now my husband and I have talked about it a lot, and he was a very difficult person to reach, I think, on a lot of levels with this situation. And our family now, I mean, we're very bonded in our faith and our family together, things that we do to get through this. And I think they were trying to use him in this situation, or maybe God was trying to use him to get through to us, you know, for his purpose, I guess, you know, to bring us closer to him and to be trusting.
So you find some religious significance in all of this?
Not really religion per se with, like, you know, breaking up Catholic and Baptist and all these religions, but just having a personal relationship with God that we can count on in times of trouble. There are so many scriptures you can read about leaning on him for that. And the reason, I guess, we're doing that for the most part is that, you know, in the Bible, I guess it talks about demons and angels. A lot of people will say they believe in one or the other, but demons, basically, they say, what is a demon? It's basically a fallen angel, one that was kicked out in the first place. You know, the whole story, if you read in the beginning how that all happened. And they hate mankind. They do not like us. They do not want anyone to have a personal relationship with God. And we did, like you said, we weren't like really going to church. We weren't doing anything. But when we got this wake-up call, we had to come together and go, as a family, what are we going to do to get through this? So every time an attack happens, and we do know when they're coming on, someone asked me about that. I said, yes, I do know when an attack is happening. We immediately get together as a family, and hopefully we're all together in the same place at the same time, and we just pray and we ask for help. But New Year's Eve of this year, 2007 going into 2008, we had a major attack at the house for 2 hours. We spent trying to pray this out, and finally, you know, we just had to say, God, send us an army of angels. Send us someone to help us with this.
Has anyone seen the good guys?
My daughter has. The night we were praying in my son's bedroom, she said, Mom, there's hundreds of them. She could see them coming. The atmosphere in the house shifts. You know, this is a good way to explain it. When demons are attacking, when the demons are attacking, and you can feel it coming on, kind of like somebody that's getting a migraine headache, they usually get, you know, precursor signs that, oh, the lights bother me, the sounds and all this. A very sick feeling, dark, heavy presence will come over. You can feel it, especially I can and my daughter. And then shortly thereafter, she may see one of them, and especially in the upstairs part of the house is where we see these things. And when a full attack is underway, I mean, these things will curse at us. Even if you mention, you know, you hear in the movies, especially, my kids have never seen movies. I've seen a few, but they say they don't like the name of God mentioned. They, you know, hiss and curse and all this kind of thing. They do. They do not like it when you do this. And, I mean, they've said verbally, well, if we can't get you, this said this to my daughter on the last time, because she said, I am not following you. We are sticking with God. You know, you verbally just declare where your faith is at. They said, we're not going to get you then. We're going to go after. We're going to get the girl, referring to my three-year-old daughter. They make threats like this, you know, just to try to scare and bully
of this. What are they asking you to do? I mean, you know, what is it that you would have to do to make them happy?
You know, I don't know. And this is what the confusing part about our story is, that it continues. It's like, it's just like having someone in your home that doesn't belong here. And when they can't scare you enough to either leave or to turn and start doing other things, I guess, they come back with reinforcements. They come back with more. They try new things. Sometimes attacks will be okay for about a month, and then we'll get another one. But there's always a presence here.
Are these seven that you described earlier, can you tell their sex?
My daughter says they're male, and on, I guess, three different occasions, they have actually given names. They will identify my husband and say, who are you? He can't see them.
Really? What kind of names?
They have said Xavier is one name, Alphonse is the ringleader, and Samael, I don't even know how you spell it, and the curiosity got the best of me. I went on the internet and just typed in demonic names. There was like a list of demonic names, and Samael is on there, and I don't know if there was any other one, but the last attack we had, my daughter said it was a little, it appeared to be a little childlike demon. It was a little girl with, she said to her eyes were red, and her name was Molly, and she just tells it like it is. When she's seeing them, you know, my husband will say, what do they look like? What are they saying? And he will get white in their face.
So how old is Molly?
My daughter said she was younger, or appeared to be. I'm not saying it's the truth, you know, about what these are, because they can do whatever they want. But she said appeared to be a childlike ghost. So it's not one of the seven, but the seven, we know for sure we have an Alphonse and an Xavier. And I don't know what significance it is. And these things lie, and they're very deceitful.
And did you ever try to record their voices?
No, and you know what? That's why I called the Todd friend of mine that does the EVPs, and I had to ask about this, and I did in the previous house, and he did not think it was a good idea with what we were dealing with to try to do that. However, We have video recorded. Like one night I had too much of everything that was going on, and I said, I'm going to set up the video camera with the night shot in the spare bedroom, and I set the camera up. And I was scared while I was doing it, but I thought, I'm going to do it anyway and try to beat these things and be braver. And I said, okay, the camera's on. I'm leaving the room. Come out wherever you are. Come out and play. You know, left the room. And the next morning, my husband got up, and he said that on the video, in like 3 and 5 minute intervals at the beginning of the tape, and I saw it, you could actually see, well, what they call an orb, like a ball of light, with the absolute direction shooting up toward the staircase. We had a ladder that was like in the room, and it was right by there. I mean, it was pretty amazing. I mean, it's not just that, you know that you see something and you can believe it, but it's just what happened to us. I can't dismiss it, and it keeps happening, the things that are happening to us with these attacks, you know. And I can't explain.
When's the most recent event you've had?
Well, it happened to me personally, and I wish it wouldn't have, but do you ever have a dream where you think you're having a dream and you're not sure you are? You think maybe it's a real thing? And in our house, I try not to dismiss things because most of the time it's real.
As I get older and concentrate on my dreams, I seem to be able to remember them a little better, so I know what you're talking about.
Well, considering, you know, the things that we have going on that we try not to talk about a whole lot with too many people, because you go at the risk of people calling you, you know, crazy. I had been awakened about 2 o'clock in the morning and looked over at my clock, and I was just on edge big time. And what happened was, you know, they talk about demons and can they hurt people, you know, physically attack. And I know from my daughter that she had been attacked before, was being thrown across the room. But this entity, I it was almost like I sort of heard it, but I didn't hear it, and I sensed it all at the same time. It was like a big mixed jumble of emotions, that it was going to claw me, tear me up, and kill me in the back. I mean, it was going to physically claw me. And I woke up, and I was so scared, and I said to my husband, I said, are you awake? And he wasn't. Of course, I'll roll back and go back to sleep. And then probably, I kept laying there, and like 5 minutes later, I heard the doorknob on our door. We had the door shut. Like somebody tried to jiggle it 3 different times, and our doorknobs are really loud. They're like these old original, you know, doorknobs. And I woke him up, and I was like, please go check out and make sure nobody is in the house. But I knew it wasn't. But then I laid there, and I thought, these things are trying to go after me now. Can they really do this? And then people are saying, well, if your faith is strong, God will not allow you to be attacked. But, you know, it was all too real that night. I knew it wasn't a dream. I mean, that was just about a week or so ago that happened to me. And I thought, okay, you know, you got to change your frame of thinking, and you have to realize that, you know, you're bigger than they are, and they're just bullies, and you keep trying to talk yourself into this. But that's probably, I mean, a direct type of attack. But it's just always something being there that shouldn't have been there. Even last night, I mean, there was something in my daughter's room. I could feel it. And you have to go right past her room to get down to the staircase to go downstairs. And I just walked past the room, and it was just like every hair in my body stood completely up. And so, you know, I don't know what they want. They just keep going after us. And we're not inviting it in. We're not doing anything but standing our ground with our faith and just, you know, praying about it. But I get the comments from people all the time, you know, why don't you bring in a witch? Why don't you do this and that? But, you know, none of that is going to solve this. I think this is a more rooted kind of situation that it's not giving up, and I don't know what it wants, but we're not meant to know that yet, I guess, you know, for having to keep going through this. But, you know, we're positive we will be victorious in the end, one way or the other, but in the meantime, we just have to take it a day at a time, and we're hoping we can move, you know, just to get away from the renovations. I don't know if that'll happen or not, but, you know, my kids will never sleep upstairs. They're always afraid, and it's just a terrible way to live, having your children, you know, be fearful and trying to fix that, you know. It's a little tough.
Yeah, I understand. We'll be back to wrap this up in a moment. Don't go away. Just wanted to take a short break to remind everybody to check out our website, jerrypippin.com. It's a mass appeal broadcast site. Everything's on demand. Everything's a podcast. Also, Windows Media downloads. jerrypippin.com. P-I-P-P-I-M. P as in Paul. All one word. Check me out. jerrypippin.com. P as in podcast. Welcome back to the Parazone, Tales of High Strangeness. Lisa Lindley is our guest. A haunted house, The demons drove them away. They decided to come back. You're not going to go away, are you? You're not going to let these demons win.
No, they're not. We've said that aloud in the house. You know, we're not going there. You're not going to win. But, you know, we didn't have any training for this.
Well, you know, on one hand, it's kind of outlandish that you're thinking that way. In another way, hand, it's quite logical. And the reason I think it's logical is you had the entities at the other house. You have them at this house. If you move to a third house, what makes you think you wouldn't have them there?
Exactly. You know, my husband and I have talked about that in detail, but our house, when we bought it was a shell. You know, it needed a lot of work. And we're really exhausted by this. We don't need this much space. And so for just the sanity of not doing renovations, that's why we really want to move. But as far as, you know, getting away from it, you can't. And I didn't want to say on the air our house is up for sale, but it is. We had it up a couple months ago and had a buyer for it, and then we had some things on our end we needed to figure out before we could actually go through with it. So we backed out, and we have it up again. And it's, you know, it's not, you can't run from it. It's totally the main thing. People need to know this stuff is real.
Well, when you sell a house and you move to the third house, you need to let me know.
Well, let's all hope it doesn't happen. But, you know, if they're determined that they're not going to give up, they're not going to give up. It's going to follow us anyway. But like I said, for cheaper electric bills, it would be smart to move. So, you know, that's kind of why we're wanting to do that.
So basically, the ghost or the entities or whatever you saw in the first house were more or less benign, just bad images, spooky images or whatever. And then in this house, they've been downright belligerent.
Right. Well, it was kind of like a build of how are you going to get to know what
we... Do you think they're connected?
Yeah, well, no, and we talked about that, too. What we have over here is completely different. And when we bought this house, I asked my husband, I begged him. I said, you know, he had more time than I did during the day, and I said, please make sure this wasn't an old funeral home. Make sure no violent deaths had occurred, because the former owner of the other place had shot herself in our master bedroom, so you're thinking, oh, violent death. There was no sign of anything. And when I came over here, it felt a little off, you know, some kind of feeling.
Well, you'd think psychologically all you've been through, you'd probably be a little wary of any place.
Kind of, but you have to, your brain learns to kind of turn certain things off so you can have an objective opinion about something. It's the human thing, you know. And it didn't feel like it felt at the other house. And that's, I mean, every house is going to have some kind of feeling about it. But when you go from our house over to, like, someone else's house that doesn't have anything like this, you totally notice a different atmosphere.
Have you told your neighbors?
You know, we live in a little town, so I think some people know history about the house from previous people that lived here or certain things. But we really maintain a low profile. I mean, between family and friends, they know the whole story. But no.
So when you moved in there, you didn't notice some sly looks from the neighbors saying, aha, suckers. Are they going to be in for a shock?
House needed so much work, yeah. But, you know, really, I don't think anybody really knew a whole lot of anything. You know, we had some people volunteer information, but it was nothing like, you know, anything having to do with a story like this. And for the sake of my kids, I mean, my older one is high school now. My little one, well, he's not so little, he's nine. When things happen, we say, please do not say anything to anybody about this.
Do you know if your daughters visited with her best friends? You know, teenagers, they have best friends, and they talk about all kinds of things.
Well, if you know a little bit here and there about the story, because a few of them have had experiences at the house, like one of her really good friends, you know, she needed somebody to lean on besides us when this was happening at the school, when the seven showed up at the school. And the girl that spent the night here said that she felt somebody touching her head, you know, in the middle of the night, and she just knew something was up. But, you know, a lot of kids, unfortunately, at our expense, they will look at this and go, oh, that's so cool, you know, I'd love to live in a house like that. Really, you don't want to do that. It's just, you know, we don't watch scary movies over here. We don't do that. We're very picky about what we expose ourselves to, because you know scary stuff is everywhere.
Have you ever had any certain type of music playing on the radio or on the a CD player or something, the ghosts act up? In other words, music soothes the savage beast. I wonder if it soothes demons. Maybe the next time you see one of these, you need to put on a little Monavani or something.
Yeah, somebody was kind of kidding with me one day, and they said, oh, you know, a friend of ours had a problem in their house, and they got the Bible on CD, and they were playing it in boomboxes throughout their house. But, really, I only listen now to like a Christian radio station. They have like, you know, contemporary music,
sure.
And they sing that at our church, and yeah. So I like it. And it's like positive reinforcement. It's like you have to take the junk out of your head that's in there. Like, because I used to watch my favorite shows, honestly, were A Haunting and, you know, all the shows that are on like Sci-Fi at 1 o'clock in the afternoon,
sure.
Like you know, this time. And, you know, I had to say, no, you know, this is all too real. This family is not going to contribute to that. You know, we don't rent those movies. I've only seen a couple movies, and, you know, when you were referring to The Exorcist, I've never seen that movie, and I probably don't need to, but you hear stories about things. But we're trying not to, you know, expose ourselves to certain things. Like Halloween, like I said, took on an entirely different meaning. I couldn't even put my little flag out last year that I usually put out, and I was like, okay, I can't do this. I wrote about it in the first book. I had a flag. I thought it was really cool. It had a haunted house, a little ghost coming out of it. I'm like, are you kidding me? I cannot put this out on my porch. You know, it was like no decorating, no nothing. But now I'm to the point that I think that since I understand what's going on, maybe I can have a little more fun subtly this year with that. But it just amazes me at how the industry has made so much money off of, you know, these scary stories. And, you know, our story's like real, and it's just amazing how Hollywood twists the truth, and then they make it difficult for people that really do have things going on. It's not always pictures flying across the room or, you know, black muck coming up in your toilet or hidden red rooms in the basement. You know, it's like our family doesn't have that, but we have something far worse that's a, you know, very real thing.
Did your daughter say what she was doing or saying when they picked her up and threw her across the room?
Yeah, well, we were watching a movie. We were actually watching RV, you know, with Robin Williams, a real funny movie downstairs, and she just went up. It was about 9 o'clock at night. They were getting ready for bed. Walked into her room, and she has our old queen-size bed up in her room, and there's like a ceiling fan above the bed, and she had left the light off, so when you flip the main switch, you know, it will come on, and she went to climb up on the bed, and something threw her across the room into the dresser, I mean, like 4 feet across the room, and I heard this big crash, and she was crying. She was sitting on the floor, and everything that was on her dresser was thrown onto the floor. It just got wiped completely off. I don't know specifically from the fall or something was mad, and I said, what is going on? Because, you know, I wasn't thinking paranormal attack, nothing's going on, and went up there, and she's sitting there crying. She said, Mom, something pushed me, threw me across the room into my dresser. Okay, what do you say to that? You know, I just went, you know, mom mode here. Did you fall? Or did you trip? Did you drop something? No, Mom. And she looked at me with these weepy eyes that I just knew that something wasn't right. And, you know, that point on from there, that's when it got interactive. Interactive is the best word, and that's why I keep using it. You know, it wasn't making conversation with us. It wasn't getting physical. It wasn't getting violent. And it was like just all of a sudden that light switch got flipped on for whatever reason, and our family got thrown into a whole new way of life, if you want to put it that way.
So you really don't see any way to coexist with these demons. You more or less are drawing the line, throwing down the gauntlet.
You know what? Coexist, it's like, it makes me a little hyper. I'm hyper by nature, but, you know, they don't belong here in our house. This is our house. You know, you can claim your home back, but that's easy to say. Like, right now, it's daylight out, and when nighttime comes, I'm not going to feel so brave about it. But the only way we can, I guess, share the space, if that's a good way to put it, is that, you know, just to keep doing the faith thing, you know, praying about it and just saying, look, you know, an attack happens, that's what our family gears up for. You'd think these things would give up if they don't like that kind of thing. Why do they keep going after it? What is it about our family that they think...
Maybe they're just as determined as you are.
Boy, that's not good, butting heads like that, you know, for us. But, you know, it is an energy drain. It really is. The house itself is an energy drain. And so, I don't know. I think it's a big lesson that our family is learning, and we're just the pawns in this experiment. I hate to say it, but it's a good descriptive term for you, you know? It's kind of like a game and all the little pieces are there, but we're not sure what the objective is.
Okay, our time is up, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you very much for having me. I hope that we shed a little light for someone on the subject.
Lisa Lindley has been our guest. The books, she has three of them, actually. Two of them are Never Alone, One Family's Hope for Finding Peace While Living with the Paranormal, and Never Alone, A Journey Home. This has been a tale of high strangeness.
Jerry Pippin's Parazone.
We have Dan Gordon with us, and the name of the book is Haunted Baseball, Ghosts, Curses, Legends, and Eerie Events. We're talking about baseball.
All right.
How are you doing?
Great.
Well, Dan, I really hadn't thought about baseball players in the supernatural. I mean, I know they're superstitious.
Almost all ball players won't step on the foul line.
Dan, in your book, you talk about the baseball gods. I mean, some of these players actually believe somebody upstairs is influencing the game. That goes beyond superstition. I imagine the umpires, they are aware of all this. They put up with a lot, don't they?
Yeah. I mean, umpires put up with a lot. I mean, they allow you to, you know, to talk back to them and to argue. And just, I mean, as soon as profanities are brought up, they usually eject it, or if they just, you know.
Entities in locker rooms, I guess we're talking about maybe a baseball player being late, leaving the locker room last, and he looks up, and over at the side there's Babe Ruth or Mickey Mantle or somebody.
it's kind of more, you know, like that. A lot of guys talk about the ghost of Yankee Stadium, and they'll talk about walking through Yankee Stadium and hearing, you know.
Oh, just not locker rooms. Chavez Ravine, for instance, where the Dodgers play. There's that story, I know you've heard about it, about the woman in the white dress. Apparition appears. Usually the people cleaning up the stadium late at night see her.
There's also a former cemetery still on the property of the Dodger Stadium, and that was the first Jewish cemetery in Los Angeles. That was moved around 1909, but you know, the tombs are still there, and workers actually hang out late at night.
And Gordon, in the book, you talk about Harry Carey, a pretty famous baseball announcer, first with the Cardinals and later with the Cubs.
Hello again, everybody. Harry Carey from Wrigley Field on a beautiful day for baseball.
I mean, the rumor was the booth, the announce booth, was haunted. You went up there with some ghost meters, couldn't find anything, right? Maybe a little bit, slight temperature drop, but nothing else.
Can't beat fun at the old ballpark, friends.
Harry Carey's spirit probably wasn't there. He was a great baseball announcer. I'd like to think his work is still going on there in that booth. Oh, well. Well, maybe not too many baseball sportscasters as ghosts, but a lot of players still believe in divine intervention from the spirits of baseball players from the past.
And on the Yankees, I believe that the ghosts of Yankees past sometimes give a helping hand to the Yankees.
So in other words, there's a lack of a better term, divine intervention sometimes.
Sure, yeah. I mean, you always see players pointing to the sky and audience, but, you know, players also talk about, you know, as I mentioned before, the baseball gods, but also just even the ghosts, and that, you know, strange things will happen, and they talk about the 2001 World Series, and the ghosts of the Yankees were there.
In your book, Dan, you mention the cleanup crew at Yankee Stadium. Late at night, early in the early morning hours, they can hear the crack of a bat on the playing field. They look out there, there's nobody there. Evidently, lots of baseball ghosts hang out at old hotels.
We captured a lot of hotel stories in the book, and guys throughout baseball are terrified of certain hotels and won't sleep there or sleep with the lights on.
And this was the hotel where they used to stay when they were in spring training, St. Petersburg.
Right, and you know, Ty was referring to the walls kind of moving, you know, perceiving them as moving. We did hear players talk about, you know, seeing people, you know, chest or...
Well, yeah, you mentioned a guy named Johnny Damon. Now, who's he? I mean, he said that he was pinned down by a ghost.
Yeah, Johnny Damon's kind of a, you know, celebrity center fielder with the New York Yankees.
Haunted baseball is an interesting subject, and I guess you've been interested in this all of your life, huh?
I have. I mean, you know, ever since I can remember, I've been enamored by baseball. And, you know, the ghost stories, and everyone's interested in ghost stories.
This has been a Parazone Vignette, a look at haunted baseball with author Dan Gordon. The book is available at your favorite bookstore. Until next time, this is Jerry Pippin. Jane Swartley was our production director and web producer. Thank you for listening. Cheers.